All right.
Good. This is Lucia. Good. It's July the 9th, and this is our free public call for July. And I'd just like to give you a really warm welcome. There's so many people on the call, and we knew there would be a lot, but Elizabeth just said we were 600 and counting. So I really have tears in my eyes. Welcome, welcome. So happy to be here with you today, and so happy to have my very best friend, Analia Benz, on the call. Are you there, Analia?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
can you hear me?
Hear you.
Oh,
yeah.
Very good, because I wasn't sure if I was able to unmute myself.
Yeah.
I like also to say thank you, and it's an amazing energy. The love is just fabulous, fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, really takes your breath away. Wow.
Indeed, yeah.
So, so for those of you, I'm sure that the vast majority of you know who Analia is, and hopefully you know who I am. I'm speaking. I'm your host. I'm Lucia Renee. And if for those of you who don't know who Analia is, if somebody dragged you onto the call, the fastest way to get up to speed is to watch her beautiful YouTube video through Project Avalon. It's gone viral very quickly, and we're really, really pleased about that, because Analia's purity and her light is reaching a lot of people. It's pissing a few people off. But that's the way, A, you know you're a public figure, and B, you're doing something right. So so that's okay. If there was any, you know, we were feeling a little bit of negativity yesterday and today coming on the call, but everybody's light who's on the call has just completely obliterated that. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. It's just an amazing, amazing group of light workers,
yeah,
and light beings, and just amazing. I'm speechless.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing when we get together, you know, for the purpose of higher knowledge and for light. It's extraordinary. Coupled with what's happening with the energy on the planet, and then all of us putting our attention on the same thing, same place, same time. It just produces extraordinary shifts in the collective. So I'd like to thank you for being willing to join and do that. Let me just do a little bit of housekeeping first, because Analia and I would like to talk for a few minutes. We thought we'd just see what came up, but kind of the general topic is, how do you align with the new paradigm in consciousness? We'll see where that subject takes us for a few minutes, and then we'll open up for questions and comments if you'd like to address something to Analia or myself. And then for those who don't have what I call the ancient templates of wisdom, I'll be disseminating those at the end, the very end of the call. So the calls generally run about an hour and a half. So perhaps we'll go an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and a half if we really get cooking. And then we'll end the call formally. And anyone who would like those ancient templates of wisdom can get them. It only takes about 5 minutes to disseminate them. And I'll also, right at the end, talk a little bit about the last four templates, templates 91 through 94. And Elizabeth, if I forget, I want to make sure to ask. Elizabeth is the only person that I've given them to so far. And she, we were talking this morning, so she's having extraordinary results with those, and I'd like her to talk a little bit. So, good. So where do we start, Analia? Where do you want to start, or what?
No, you go ahead.
Me go ahead?
I'm so speechless.
Well, you know, one thing I was pondering this morning was, Analia and I recently did a trip to Ecuador. She did a wonderful workshop there that was very well attended. It was about 70, 75 people, I think, right? And really, they came from all over the world and converged in this little tiny village in Vilcabamba, Ecuador, which is exquisite. And Vilcabamba was very, very interesting. It it really has popped off of the third dimension in a big way. I spent some time in Ashland, Oregon, and it too has popped off of the third dimension in my estimation, but Vilcabamba is very multidimensional. And so when I was there, I noticed the heightened synchronicity of life. And it wasn't just me. Anyone I talked to who had been there for a while, who was attending the workshop, was expressing the same sentiment. And that is that if a question popped into your mind, oh, I'd really like the answer to this, someone would walk around the corner and you'd start a casual conversation and they would answer that question. So things were completely, my experience was that things were completely effortless there. And it started me thinking about the fact that there are really a couple of factors. Things are very effortless if you are aligned with the new paradigm in general, but we had the added benefit of being in a place where there is an extreme energy vortex and a lot of conscious people, and so it is truly multidimensional, and that meant that if you are conscious, right, and if you are aligned with the new paradigm in consciousness, and if you were in that particular place, everything was perfectly supported. So my point there is I would like to suggest to you, when things are not being supported, that it's probably not you. It's probably just the energy of the collective where you're living. So to fly back into the United States was a pretty painful experience. It's very, very thick here. People are in a lot of reaction, doing a lot of projecting. I don't know where you are or what the energy is like in your part of the world, but you do have to take that into consideration. So, just by way of introduction, anything you want to add to that about Ecuador, Anelia?
Yes, absolutely. The thing is also, though, that sometimes our place is to be where the thickest energy is, because that's where we can bring the most value. So when we look at the synchronistic events, I think also that happens when we align ourselves with our mission. Once we align ourselves with our mission and basically surrender to it, synchronistic events start happening all around us. And I think a lot of the time, some people have, you know, when they look into the people who were there at Vilcabamba, some of them mentioned that people would move in, and if they were not aligned with the energy there, they would leave very quickly. Like, even if they had every intention and they had bought a place, everything, they wouldn't last there very long, because the synchronistic energy with regards to the person's mission is so strong there that they would be sent back to where they were supposed to be.
Mm. Yeah, there was a lot of discussion about, oh, I'd like to move here, but in many cases it wasn't appropriate, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking also this morning about an analogy. You know, it's such a good point that you raise about the Dharma and being of service. I think for me, one way of saying how do you align with this new paradigm is this: as long as you are in the mode of trying to fulfill your own personal desires, as long as the mind is churning away and saying, oh, if I do this, if I change jobs or I change spouses or I move, that is what's going to make me happy, right? As long as we're caught up in that, the Buddhists depicted as the wheel of life, and Buddha talked about the fact that life is suffering, and suffering is caused by attachment, right? So being attached to outcome with the personal mind, I want the outcome to be the new job, and I'm avoiding staying in my old job. These are attractions and aversions, at least as described in the classic texts. So as long as we are trying to fulfill our personal desires, it's as though we're standing on the bank of the river of Dharma and kind of, you know, putting a toe in occasionally, or we have our little boat there and we say, should I get in it, should I not? But once you realize that life is about service, that life, that you've come in with gifts, that that life really begins when you offer those gifts to the world in service, in a selfless way. Then it's like you get in the boat finally and you push off from the bank, and then you're in the flow of Dharma, in the flow of the river, and the river takes you. And sometimes another boat may come up and sink up and float along with yours for a while, in which case, fine, then there is a reciprocity there. There's an exchange that takes place. But then the boat, you know, goes off in another direction. So we really are allowing, in other words, spirit to direct the life. And it doesn't mean, you know, people have this term, go with the flow. And Rama, who was my spiritual teacher in this and other lives, I once heard him say, she who goes with the flow goes down the drain. So it's not exactly, in my estimation, about surrender or going with the flow. Surrender has a weak connotation to me, but there is a place between structure and flow, yeah? And we have to find that for ourselves, the middle ground. I mean, you're floating in the river, but you do have a boat, and that structure, you do still have to say, well, my Dharma is this, and, you know, what would happen, spirit, if I implemented it this way? Please show me the right way. So the mind is there to help us structure, but the mind was never intended to run the show. And the mind is very sure that it can tell you all the ways to fill your personal desires and make you happy, that we have to at some point recognize that the mind is overwhelmed with that job of running the show, that it's really just a logical tool, and use it for something that it's better suited for, which is aiding us to figure out how we do our Dharma. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I've seen it over and over when people find out what it is, and normally it's sort of following their joy, what is it that gives them the most joy. And once they find it, everything just starts clicking into place and they go, you know, like down that raft, and it's very, very cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, control really is a paradigm that was born out of the patriarchy. The patriarchy is about oppression and control, and we try to control because we want to make ourselves safe. We want to manage our environment so that we are safe and the mind thinks happy. But really control is, the feeling of control is very rigid, yeah? It's not structured, but rigid. So if you're having trouble figuring out how to unhook yourself from the old system of oppression and control, then you need to really look at the control issues. Just ask. I always just ask, Spirit, please shine a spotlight on this for me. You know, I know that I'm still controlling. And if we are all honest, we do, to some extent or another, try to modulate and control and manipulate our environment. So just ask to have the spotlight shined on that, because that really, in my estimation, is the thing that's holding most people back.
Yes, absolutely. The control thing is really interesting. I was wondering when you were talking about that, if you had any examples that you could share with us.
About control, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, well, sometimes I run into it, you know, when I give someone, I have this tool called the 12D processor. You know it well, Analia. You were here that weekend. Mm-hmm. When it was formulated and engineered. But it comes up sometimes when people are getting ready for their appointment. And to some people, it's a big deal. And it is a big deal. You don't, you know, there's something artificial that's going to be inserted into the subtle physical body. And then you need to configure it to do your Dharma or to eradicate the ego, whatever it is. And sometimes I find people panic about that. And so they may start to send a lot of emails to my assistant saying, you know, well, what, you know, what is it going to be like, or what, you know. So there's just that's the expression of a control issue. I have to know. I have to get this locked down, right? Well, no, you don't have to get it locked down. You just have to show up for the appointment and go through the experience. So you know, I think I watched at one point a wonderful DVD set by Ian Lundgold, who was one of the men who helped to decipher the Mayan calendar. And he made it very clear when he was describing this particular time on the planet, when we're moving from a planetary to a galactic type of configuration, you know, his sentiment was the mind cannot compute at this point fast enough to keep up, and truly we have entered that time. So if the mind is trying to compute and trying to ensure that everything is in place, you're in serious trouble at this point. You really need look at the mind's control or attempts to control, because that forces the awareness field into a rigid, you know, you're forcing it to be rigid again and again and again as thoughts are coming up, when really it's just a matter of relaxing the mind, relaxing back into the experience on the level of feeling or vibration.
I see. Yes, I totally understand what you're saying. That's very true. It's almost as though also when something happens to us, we go, why did that happen? Or try to allocate who's doing it and stuff, when in fact the energies that are coming through, that's all the data we really need in order to process them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, heavy, heavy projection at this point. You know, for all of us, if we're honest, I went through a situation just this week where I was projecting onto, I have a bank account in Europe, and I was trying to do some business, and they do business in Europe differently than they do in the United States. And I, as an American, was getting frustrated and saying, well, my account representative, well, you know, they're certainly not trying to get my business, you know, getting a little bit huffed up. And then when I really sat the next morning in meditation and I looked inwardly at that situation, I realized that, you know, I was projecting onto the situation. I wanted to control the situation and just get my business done. But really there was a lot going on the other side. And what was going on the other side was fear. I mean, when you get down to the basis of any process, there is fear. And so when I was willing to take the time and to sit down and to feel the energy of the resistance that was coming up for me in this little personal situation, and then to look at this man who I was projecting onto as someone causing the resistance, when I really looked into his being, right, there were certain banking regulations that made him answer the way he did, and they were driven by fear. And then if you sit into or feel your way into that energy of fear, then, of course, you always drop through into the light, because fear is just the last layering, the last layer of the onion on the process. And once you meet and see, just look at the fear, then, bam, it opens up into pure consciousness, pure light. And I saw, this is just one more human being who's struggling to find his way into the light. No problem. I have to work this in a different way and stop projecting, yeah?
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. It always comes down, you're absolutely right. Whenever I have looked into whatever happens in my personal life as well, once I start doing the processing, it always ends up with either a fear that I have or a fear that's being projected from somewhere else. And if we look at even at a global scale, the control mechanisms that are in place at the moment, they are all based on fear. All the laws are, you know, like to protect, or because they are afraid of others.
Yeah.
And you have a wonderful process that you used to deal with fear.
Yeah, it's really Pamela Wilson's technique that I've taken and adapted for myself, but that's what we do on our the private calls that I offer, the Women Standing in Their Power for women only, and then Embracing the Divine Feminine for men and women. Yeah, and fear is, of course, the last piece, the inner piece of every process. You know, so one really good shortcut that I found, when I started to learn processing, I really delved into it and rolled up my sleeves, and I would sit when a process would come up. In other words, when I was triggered by something in my environment, like the banking representative or the global elite or, you know, my friends, whatever, I would practice the processing technique by moving into each of those layers. So generally the outer layer was always mental judgment of some sort, and then emotional anger for me. But that's just because I grew up in a family with a father who became frustrated and angry when he couldn't make something work, right? Somebody else, many women are programmed to go right into worthlessness. So it just depends on what our upbringing, our conditioning, our samskaras from other lifetimes, those tendencies are. But I would sit down through, go through the minutiae of sitting through each layer. So I would sit down into the anger, and then that would dissolve into maybe insecurity, and then I would really meet and welcome the insecurity and fall through to a sense of enormous aloneness, and then fall through to the fear of being alone, and finally fall through to the light. But the shortcut that I learned after I had processed myself for a while was really just to ask myself, whenever I was triggered, okay, you've been triggered, right? The first thing is you got to catch the story. The story is what the mind is turning away on, the judgment, the finger pointing. Okay, now we catch the story. I'm in reaction, hello, and then just ask the question, so what am I so afraid of? Because at the bottom of this process, there must be fear. Every process that I've ever encountered is driven by fear. And then you really don't have to sit down through all of those swampy layers of emotion if you don't want to. You just go right to the heart of it and feel your way into the fear and say, oh, okay, it's a fear predicated on this. Let me sit with this because this is the core of the issue.
I love that. I love that. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Where's the fear? Where's my fear? What am I afraid of?
Yeah. Yeah, and of course the other shortcut is just to take the finger you're pointing at somebody and say, how do I do that? Because really whatever you're projecting onto the other person is something that's buried in our own unconscious that we don't want to identify, right?
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're getting, you know, your YouTube video went absolutely viral within a couple of weeks, 100,000 hits, which was phenomenal. And when you do that, you know, when you really put yourself up as a public figure, then there's a backlash that occurs. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that backlash, Anelia?
Well, I think that that's a good example, but anybody who stands up in their own power will have a type of backlash either from fears that come up for themselves or things that people will react around them. I get a lot of emails saying, you know, my spouse or my friends, they think I'm crazy since I've started following my dharma. Things like that, you know. It can happen at a public level or it can happen at a very personal level. For me, it's been, I received, I think, probably 99% of the feedback that I've received from the interview has been 100% positive. People who have come up and said, yep, I'm like that too. I'm like you. The only difference is I've been here a few lifetimes, or I've had an evolutionary trajectory in another planet, and this is the first time on this planet. And also from people saying, you know, this is me too, but I work in the background silently. And also many people saying thank you for speaking up and thank you for reminding me. So 99% of the feedback has been 100, like totally positive, and there's been a few very little I say probably less than 1% which has been extremely negative, and my response to that, and also there's been groups who have got together to only a little handful of people to slander and to try to what they call debunk me, you know. And my response to that is something actually, Lucia, that you said, is that the person only has to do that is listening to both sides. For example, a person who sees the video and is greatly inspired by it, and then they look and see, you know, another video saying that I'm a fraud or something, which actually there is one out there. All they have to do is look at the energy behind each person that's saying these things. So they look behind, for example, I would invite them to look at my work and look at myself and then look at the other person, what they're saying, and look at the energy. Just feel the energy behind it and make up your own mind, because at the end of the day, each person really has to follow their higher self and their own intuition. I'm not here to disprove any other person or what they're saying, because honestly, to them, it's true. You know, what they're saying is true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so energetic about it. I could say, look, there's ego. They have their 5 minutes of fame or whatever. But it really doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, and it's something else that you said, Lucia, to me, the message comes not from us, but it's from higher source, and it's going to get out there, right? Nothing that we do or say really is going to have any impact on stopping it, because it's out there to be reach the people, and it's going to reach the people. All we can do is just be willing to be that channel, I think, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so it feels, you know, because I used to get this, or I still get it sometimes when people, especially about my 12D processor, because Rama, who was my teacher, engineered it. And so sometimes people get on and they read about it and they say, oh, I really want that. And then they search on Rama and they see a lot of negative publicity about him when he was alive, and they get confused. And I have to say exactly the same thing. You just look at the energy of Rama, or you look at the energy of me. I'm Rama's student, the outcome of his teaching process. And then you look at the energy of those who are saying negative things about him, and you make your own mind up, right? Because really, it's very simple. Light vibrates in a very pristine and quiet and subtle way, right? And any of the so-called negative emotions, like anger and hatred and jealousy, whatever, those vibrate in a really erratic and jangled way. They have a huge impact in terms of the inner planes when someone is projecting that on to somebody else, when they're not taking responsibility for their own reaction to Analia, for example, right, and saying, well, what is it that I'm reacting to in this woman? What is it that's buried in my unconscious that I really need to address in myself? Why the need to project and point fingers? And, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the key, and that's something I do, because I you know, I'm human too, and I have reactions. And like you do, that's the first thing that I will look at. I think, okay, where's the what I call it, the way that I describe it, where's the in? How did this get in? Because for
yeah,
it
where's
to
the opening,
me,
right?
Yeah,
where's the
that's
opening?
Right. That's,
yeah.
Exactly. So I look and I search and I see, because it's just vibration. The entire universe is made of vibration. If somebody's sending a vibration toward me and it's resonating inside of me, that's how it affects me, you see. So where is it that it's resonating? I find the resonance, and then I deal with it. I process it myself. And one of the things that I thought was beautiful is that the process that I use is actually really similar to yours. And I do the same thing. I look for it, and I just look at it. You know, I look at it and I let it expand, and eventually it just transforms. Sometimes it gives you information, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it wants to stick around, and sometimes it's easy to just release it. when it wants to stick around, sometimes we can, and we can look at it today, the next day, and, you know. But, yeah, this always has to be, if something affects us, we're able to respond to it. So if something that is affecting us, we are responsible for, you know, able to respond to it, which is very empowering, because then we don't become a victim of anybody or anything. Mm. And people can throw all sorts of things at us, but we are powerful in that we are able to respond to that in our own selves. And then it's the thing outside will sometimes will transform like magic, and sometimes it will just move away. It's like it doesn't affect us anymore, because we have dealt with whatever the opening was, the in that was there.
Yeah, and I love your method of just looking at something. It's so simple and clean, because it's really just the projection of light without any judgment, without any agenda. Sometimes you remind me of this. We're just going to look at this without any agenda whatsoever, right? And then it's spirit's. It's spirit's
right.
job to change it in whatever
yes.
way. But when you look at something, it's just the application of light onto the situation. So if there is some knot in consciousness, some knot of darkness there, darkness can't withstand light. Repeated applications of light cause darkness to be dispelled, right? And whether that's
right.
a vibration in the universe, in someone else, being projected within ourselves, something that we're not taking responsibility for and owning, it doesn't matter. It's all, as you say so eloquently, just vibration in the universe. What does it matter at this point?
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things that came up when we were talking about how do we move into this new paradigm, there's a lot of resistance for us not to move into the paradigm as a collective and as individuals. The resistance, like you mentioned, is fear. And the fear can come through at a social level. And the media, I mean, is projecting so much fear into everybody. And they're using the alternative media as well. You know, there's a lot of fear. And also at a personal level, when somebody says, you know, I'm just going to stop playing the game. I'm going to start looking at alternatives. I'm going to start making moves into moving into a new way of living and sharing, and even commerce, you know, the people who are moving into other types of energy exchange for their work. There's a huge amount of resistance from everywhere. And I'd like to ask you if you have any advice for people who are going through this.
Well, what comes to mind is, you know, the old spiritual adage, recognition is liberation, right? So when you're right, when somebody is making huge shifts in their life, when we on a personal level are in an experiential level, moving more into this paradigm, that shakes everybody in our life up, our friends, our family. Everyone starts to give us negative feedback. But really, you have to recognize, it's just what we were talking about. That's fear, right? That's fear coming up. Because what they're doing is basically, on some unconscious level, saying to themselves, if she can do it, I can too. And I'm not. I'm afraid to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So better for me to point a finger and tell her she can't and try to drag her down, try to keep her on my level in the old paradigm, right? So you just have to be prepared for that. You just, recognition is liberation. If you can recognize that someone is coming out of a fear-based stance for their own evolution, for their own unwillingness, or you know, the battle that's going on within them to either stand in the patriarchy and the old ways of oppression and control, or shift their weight over to that foot that's in the new paradigm. It's just the fear of doing that. And we have to be willing, you know, to Rama used to say, human beings are like cattle, you know, being herded into the slaughter. You have to be that cow. I recently read an article on the internet. It was fabulous, about a cow somewhere in the Midwest here in the United States who had actually jumped the fence at the slaughter yard and gone off, you know, off through the pastures, jumped several barbed wire fences, swam a river, and right. got free. And they actually, everybody at the slaughterhouse voted, no, we're not going to go and get her and slaughter her. She should be given clemency.
Wow.
And so they passed, they found a farmer who would pasture her. But you have to be willing to do that. You have to be willing to split off from the herd. And if you're contained in a family unit, you know, and friends, this is why I say on my website, one of the most important factors for unplugging from the old world is to align yourself with people who are like-minded. You have to mm-hmm. cut yourself off from the herd that is still involved in compression, in oppression and control, and find people who are interested in living this new paradigm. Then your ideas and your actions and your experiences are reinforced, right? You're not going against the current.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very good point. There's a lot of also, I've received a lot of emails from people who would be saying, I'm afraid that I'm moving into the new paradigm, but my children are not, or my spouse isn't, or my parents, my brothers and sisters, and I don't want to leave them behind. What do I do? Do I stay in this one and be with them, or what do I do? And I found that one of the things, when I looked into that particular problem, something that everybody can do is actually talk directly to the other person's higher self.
Mm.
And just explain things to that person at that higher self, and respect them, show them gratitude for their care, because they're afraid, and they're also afraid for the person who's making the changes, because they're, like you said, you know, they're just being herded and programmed, I think, at a cultural and societal level to just follow the rules, you know. But I found that there's a lot of positive results if a person is willing to communicate with others' higher self. Even if somebody's screaming and shouting at one point, if we don't get sucked into the drama, we can just speak to that higher self and just say, you know, I love you, and I want you to know that you're safe, and give them that sense of, it's safe, it's okay. And it's also okay to be afraid, because once the person allows that, it's okay to be afraid. That's kind of allowing it to be there, you know, the part of the process.
Mm.
And just embrace the other person, maybe not physically, because they might punch you, but in an energetic level. But it's really hard. Even myself, I found myself, even recently, being sucked into a situation where I was sucked into the drama of a situation, and it's really difficult. So I do understand how hard it is to stay centered and stay as a place of compassion when these things are happening. Mm. But I think it's a key element, I think.
So you're saying, if I understand you correctly, then not to engage in perhaps the argument that's ensuing, but rather just to, at a later time, sit in meditation and silently, inwardly, energetically address the person's higher self?
That's right, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, beautiful.
And even if we do engage, at the time and start swearing at them and calling them names, even if we do that, it's fine, because we're human, you know?
Yes.
And we have to also forgive ourselves and, you know, go into that space ourselves and say, you know, like, I understand why that happened, and this is my true intention, is to move forward in a more balanced or peaceful way, or with understanding. And I know there have been some feedback. I got a couple of emails of people who have tried it, and they said that they were really surprised that, for example, there was one gentleman that said that he had a friend who for years had been against everything he stood for. He'd been following his dharma and following teaching himself and learning about beyond reality things for many years, and his brain had always gone against him. And then he did the little exercise with him in mind, and a couple of days later, his friend came up to him and asked him to teach him all these things. Mm. And he was just blown away, you know, because he was the last person he expected to come to him. So it does work, and it's at an energy level. Sometimes the results are in the what we call reality, and it will come up really strongly. And sometimes it's just very subtle because we encounter less resistance. Mm. And when we do encounter less resistance, we mustn't fall into the trap of what's happening, you know, kind of fear, what changed, what am I doing wrong, how come these people are not against me anymore? Because sometimes we get into, like, the warrior mode, and if somebody's not fighting us for what we believe, we think we're not doing the right thing, you know. So, but it doesn't have to be hard. It can be easier. It can be an easier path.
Good. I'm going to try talking to my banking representative's higher self. I like this.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's really coming up in consciousness for me lately, is that each person, when you realize that each person is struggling to overcome this fear-based paradigm, and really we're all just humans who are struggling towards the light, right? We may be very confused, we may be convoluted, we may be projecting, but really if you take the time to look into any person's situation, I come to the realization, yes, this is just another being struggling to return to the light, right?
Mm. Yes, absolutely. I mean, everybody is on a journey to wholeness, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's in this lifetime or they have been doing it for many, many lifetimes. And even the people that frustrate us around us that we might think are completely asleep, there are levels of awakening in everybody, because the call that went out to us was from the collective, and the collective is everybody, and the planet included.
Mm.
And I have seen it reflected in a social level. For example, the secret, the video, even though it was kind of a little bit hijacked and just aimed at material things and to manifest, but the key element was to bring into the collective the possibility that we might be able to manifest ourselves what we want out of life, or what is what we came here to have as a life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that came into the entire collective. It's not been understood by a lot of people because they still think it's about fame or having a romantic relationship, or a beautiful car. And it can be about those things too. But if what we talked about before, once we align with what we're here to do, with our mission or our dharma, once we align with that, then manifestation becomes very, very fast and very quick.
Mm.
Once it's aligned. And I think what you said, when you were saying it's what our minds want, I think that's also the ego, isn't it? When it's an ego desire, then it's not going to happen, or it's a mind desire, it's not going to happen. And if we look at it deeply, is we desire those things at a physical level because we think that they're going to make us happy, right?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah, and to
if we...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, sometimes they're driven by the body, you know, wanting to be fed and clothed. Sometimes they're legitimate.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The body being, yes, absolutely.
So, should we open up to have a few questions or comments, Sunelia?
Yeah, that's a great idea, yes.
Yeah.
So... people can put their hands up for something, right?
Yes. You just press *2. Everyone right now is muted because we're in lecture mode. But if you would like to address a question to Anelia or myself or have a comment you'd like to share, then press star 2, and Elizabeth is on the controls, and she will bring you online. Open up your microphone. The fun thing that I like getting together. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to put somebody on.
Good. I was waiting for someone to come on. Do that. Put them on.
All right. it looks like 802 is the prefix.
Hi, is that Judy?
Hi. Yeah, Judy. How are you?
Hi. First, just Anelia and Lucid, this has just been absolutely awesome to get both of your perspectives and hear you both say the same thing, but just in a different way, a little bit different way. It's really great. And I just wanted to add something because I've been going through this for the last couple of days, and finally I had to let go totally of these fears that I've had for my physical body remaining healthy in light of all of the programs out there to get rid of the supplements in the U.S. and the GMO stuff and on and on and on. And for whatever reasons, that triggers stuff in me, and I'm working on that. But my messages from Spirit were that I just had to totally let go and just be. So I'm really even just giving up having, I mean, yes, I want a healthy body, but I'm giving up wanting a healthy body. And then what's the biggest corollary to that? You don't have a healthy body, but you're always feeling fine when you're on the inside and just being. And those are the insights that came to me. And so I just thought I don't know if I explained this well enough so that you guys and so that I got my point across, but I just think that's another dimension to what you mentioned in the very beginning, Lucia, because sometimes we can't even drop down and then get to where we think we want to go. Sometimes, I mean, we really have to give everything up to get what we want.
And yeah, and the beauty of that situation to me, because I flash on that too, Judy, is, oh my God, am I not going to be able to have my supplements? But I think we've entered into a time when it's just forcing our backs up against the wall even more, which is the grace of this time on the planet Earth, which means, well, maybe I don't need those supplements. Maybe I can use one of the ancient templates, right, to make my body more healthy. And I think we have the ability at this point to, do a cellular regeneration or whatever we need.
Right. That thought's been in the back of my, I don't want to say mind, but, that I've had that feeling too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anelia, what do you think?
I think that's the key, because when we give up the control, like you were saying, and this is also, thank you for that addition, the body thing, the control of the body and how we want the body to be, whether it's healthy or thin or tall or blonde or brunette or hair, like no hairs on your legs, whatever, or muscular if you're a man, and six pack, all that control for the body. And the body is our greatest tool, but it can also be our greatest enemy, if we don't reconnect with the body. And I read somewhere, I can't remember where, that the body can create any chemical that it needs. It's like the greatest pharmaceutical machine on the planet, the physical body. And it can actually create it, and all we have to do is give it the opportunity. Or I know there's people working with sounds to create these things that the body needs. I played with the sungazing in myself to receive all nourishment. Actually, that was a side effect. I had some physical illnesses, And I read that the sun gazing was beneficial for that. So I did the sun gazing, and it did help. I don't have those conditions anymore. And then I had the side effect after 6 months of having given the choice of not eating anymore. And I wouldn't need to eat. I just need to drink water and get all my nourishment from the sun. And when I looked into that, and that moment, I actually thought about it for quite a long time, and I decided not to. And I've kind of changed my mind a few times, and I thought about going back. The reason I decided not to is because one of the things I most enjoy about this planet is the food. I love fruit. I love ice cream and chocolate and stuff like that. You know, some of these things are really bad for me, you know. But I aim to, because sugar is really bad for all our bodies. But, for example, I get fruit and I make a smoothie out of all fruit to put a rohani, and then I freeze it. So I have my, it's not ice cream, it's like a fruit lolly or something. But it's still there, you know. And I thought, I don't want to give that up, you know. But it's okay because my body has adapted, and now I can actually, I used to eat like a horse, and I was really skinny as a rake. I'm still as skinny as before, but I don't have to eat like a horse anymore. I can eat a regular meals like anybody else does and maintain my energy levels on the planet, at this planetary level. And I still do the sun gazing occasionally, and I might actually go back and do it. But there are methods, there are ways that we can disagree with the disintegration or the sicknesses of the body. And one of the examples I have is also with regards to the body and about illnesses, is that illnesses have a purpose. They serve us somehow, serve us or others. For example, I have a recurring back problem, and I've been given like lots of explanations that fear is based on that point or whatever, and I looked at it and there was problems there. But then I looked and I thought, okay, how does this serve me? How is my body serving me by giving me this enormous backache every now and then? I mean, I literally ended up in the ER once. My body had gone into shock because of the level of the pain. And I thought, okay, let's have a look at that. And the way it was serving me was when I was doing too much, when I was working too much and not taking care of my body in any way or form, my body would go into that pain. It was just shouting and screaming at me, you know, okay, why don't we go for a swim? Why don't we take a walk in the park? Why don't we just rest on the grass and lie down there and look at the sky and look at the clouds go by? It was just the body screaming that I was driving it like a slave and not giving it anything that it needed, you know? And so that was how it was serving me. It was serving the pain in my back, it was serving me to say, you have to take a break. You know, you have to take a break. You have to go swimming. You have to go for a walk or whatever. You know, you have to, because I was working 24/7. I have, I also have a little boy. So between the collective work, the personal work, and the family work, it was just too much, and that's how it was going. So, yeah, a healthy body is very, very useful, but sometimes the illnesses have a purpose and they're serving us somehow.
So my question is, are you going to tell them about the sangria?
Oh, the sangria, yes. Oh, the sangria. When we were in Vilcabamba. Oh, yeah, because one of the things that I can't do, if I'm going to do energy work, I can't have alcohol for a few days, like 48 hours before or after. And when I mean alcohol, I mean I take half a glass of wine and I'm totally passed out because it affects me really badly. When we were in Vilcabamba, I was, you know, like I couldn't drink anything before the seminar. And then after the seminar, we had a little celebration dinner, wasn't it, where Lucia was staying. And she recommended the sangria, and we had the sangria. It was a hot sangria, and it was the most beautiful thing ever. So we decided this is going to be our ritual for the future. After we're going to do all our work before 12 noon, and then we're going to start on the sangria. Isn't that right, Lucia?
Yes, and have arguments over whose day is it to make the sangria. Oh, yes. Very good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, thank you, Judy. That was happy you brought that up.
Oh, thank you.
All right, we have 12 other people on the call who have their hands up here. And the next person, it's an unknown Skype, so it might be an overseas.
Yep, just speak up if you're a Skype, yeah?
I'm not a Skype, I'm overseas. Is this me?
Oh, yes, hello.
Oh, hi, Lucia. It's Kim here in New Zealand.
Hi, how are you, Kim?
Good. Hi, Analia.
Hi.
Hi. I've never really bought into the dark forces side of thing. And I don't know, Lucia, if you got that email I sent you a few days ago or not, that I sent you.
Yes, I received an email.
So you'll know what I'm talking about. Yeah, but recently I just started to wonder if I am allowing something in, and then what your advice would be, best advice. I mean, even last night, the dream, because it's 7 o'clock in the morning here, and the dream I was having just before the call seemed all about that as well.
You'll have to give us a little more data because I'm sorry, I get a lot of emails. So just let us know what the situation is.
Okay. Well, this morning, just before I woke up, I was having this really strange dream that, sorry, I've just got to go and have a look at it to remind myself what I wrote down. I just moved into a house. And one day I came home, and the landlord, who's a man, had moved all my stuff out, and he told me that he wanted to have a dance class in the space, and I was absolutely furious, but I felt completely powerless, and I didn't know what to do. And I didn't really want to move out, but I couldn't live like that. And I was trying to listen to your seminar, this seminar right now that's happening. I was trying to listen to it, but I was having to deal with this situation that was going on. And I just didn't want to miss you giving out the templates. So I was busy running around trying to sort the situation out. And he put the stuff back, but then he took it away again. And then I eventually managed to get onto the seminar, and you just started giving the templates. So I'd sort of missed the first half. And then I caught the second half. And as soon as I heard your voice, I shot up in the air in ecstasy and felt all the templates whizzing through my body. But I woke up because then the alarm went off just at that precise moment, and I woke up feeling really, really groggy and just feeling like, what's going on energetically? Mm-hmm. Does that help?
Yeah. So what is the concern?
Well, you talk about the elite, you know, you've often talked about the elite, you know, sending, I don't know how you would describe it, but sending, you know, trying to prevent you doing things, sending maybe energy towards you. And I'm trying to work out if there's something like that happening with me. Because I'm feeling like sometimes that I'm unable to move forward, and I've just done so much work on myself, constantly looking at myself to work out, okay, what needs to be worked on, what could I be doing better, what do I need to look at. And I've never really considered outside forces as being an influence, but I'm just starting to wonder.
Well, I don't think that it's a situation that most people have to worry about. I mean, if you're stepping up onto a very public stage and you're going up against the global elite, as Analia and I do, then, yeah, you have to be concerned that you're coming on the radar and you may have some backlash, which indeed has happened in both of our cases. But if you're not a public figure, then I think it's a bit paranoid to think that the global elite is after you. And I realize that's kind of a popular stance.
Oh, no. I'm not saying it's the global elite. No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying energy of, you know, of a caliber that's, you know, not for the light. I mean,
yeah.
The work that I do, I help people, basically I help people to recover from chronic illnesses without any medication or supplements, with nothing, simply by becoming aware, like what you were talking about before, Inalia, about the illness serving a purpose. I help people to become aware of what's really going on underneath the illness at a mental and an emotional level. And I'm quite out there with saying, you know, this is possible. And I just wonder if there's, yeah, energetically something that's trying to hold me back.
Inalia?
I think that for one, there's two points really. One of them, if you're going against the pharmaceutical companies, and anybody, any wholeness facilitator or healer that is working to and being effective in healing others or helping others healing themselves without the use of drugs, will have a blanket projection of energy towards them from those who are making a lot of money out of physical illness. On the other point is that, like we talked before, it doesn't really matter where the negativity is coming from, because if it's resonating within you, that's what you have to address. That's where you have to go. Whether it's resonating within you at a personal level or at a collective level, because sometimes when we deal with all our stuff, then we move on to the collective. We start processing the collective. And then sometimes it feels like, oh, my God, you know, I've done years and years of work, and I had gone so far, and all of a sudden I'm back to square one. When you get that feeling, it's because you actually moved on to dealing with processing the collective. And so trying to identify with that, or if that resonates with you, it might be that's what you're dealing with. And especially if you're healing or helping people heal themselves without any medications or supplements, this will be information that each person that you touch will be adding to the collective. So there will be a resistance there. And so I don't know if that resonates with you at all. Does it?
It does resonate, actually, because it has crossed my mind sometimes, you know, it's beyond me just as a personal person. Well, obviously it is for everybody because we're all connected, but I have thought that a few times, but you saying it brings it back into my consciousness. And I do recognize that it's all, you know, I do totally understand that thing of, you know, where's the point in me or the opening in me. I totally get that. I know that if it's not in me, then I can't be drawing it in or, you know, or having an issue.
Right.
But sometimes it just feels like, oh, my goodness,
yeah.
So much ongoing.
And then sometimes it's easier or sometimes it's helpful to also ask, where in the collective is this?
Mm-hmm.
Where in the collective is this?
Yeah.
Because
if
you look in yourself, sorry.
Go ahead, Inalia.
Because if you look at yourself, and your bodies and your energy bodies and see where is this and you can't find it, then you move on and say, where is it in the collective? And sometimes then you go, boom, there it is, you know. And then you can process it. You're powerful enough to process it. You're able.
Okay.
The other thing that may help is, you know, there's a little bit of the issue is laced with resistance, yeah? So there's a part of Kim that's saying, why me, or I don't want to have to deal with this, or why would the landlord take all the furniture out? Why do I have to be put in this situation? Instead of, and that's a normal human reaction, we don't want to deal with anything that's uncomfortable. We want to run in the other direction. But really, it's being given to you, this experience, to help you accelerate your evolution at this point, right? So the better way to view it would be to say, okay, what is the gift now that I'm being given? Something's getting in on this opening. Now I have to see at a more subtle level, right? Something that needs to be addressed in terms of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. I'm just writing that down. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that. Where's the gift in the situation? I love it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have still quite a few folks who have their hands raised here, and I'm going to go to, it looks like Santa Rosa, California, and the first three numbers are 707.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. hi, Lucia. Hi, Nelia. This is Cecilia.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hi. Can't believe I'm talking to you guys. It's wonderful. Thank you for offering this so much. You know, there must be a theme for today's call because my question is so similar to the last two. But anyways, Nelia, I saw your video, and I have to say I was on a high for like 3 days after. It was such a validation. It was like a little surge of energy. It was just, I don't know. It was amazing. Thank you so much for doing that. And so I'm so excited, and I bought your Ascension course, and I've been doing your fear processing exercise. And I have to say that first week, I did the fear processing exercise like all the time, and I felt invincible. I just was like, oh, my God, this is so exciting. I get to process this. I get to process that. So I was just – I felt invincible. And then the next week, I fell apart. And from what I heard you guys saying, it was like – I think it was like a backlash where I must have gone to a next level of stuff that – I didn't have the certainty to process, and it just kind of overwhelmed me, and I kind of just tuned out this last week. I totally kind of just tried to numb myself and just get through it the best I could, which was by eating a lot of chocolate, which I normally don't eat, but it was like the only thing that seemed to help. So, but anyways, I've been able to clear it, and I think, you know, I mean, I think you kind of already answered my question about it being maybe like a backlash or maybe a level of new stuff ready to be processed that perhaps I got overwhelmed or something like that. So I don't know. I don't really know what my question is exactly.
When that situation happens and you feel overwhelmed, you can always say to your higher self, okay, this is a little bit too much. I want it baby steps again, and let's go back to a easier level, right?
Yeah.
Because when we work really hard and we're moving really quickly, our higher self does provide us with more gifts, as it were, as we just mentioned. And so we can actually control or, you know, like request of the level that we want to work at. And it could be just transitory, something that we can take a break. And also, it's always important when we're doing the ascension work, or like ascension being the expansion of awareness, there's nothing more to it, really. To take breaks, to smell the roses, to bring joy into our lives. And just like I would get the big, bad back pain on my back. Sometimes when we become overwhelmed like that, it's because all our senses are saying, okay, you know, this is too much. You're going to take a break. You've got to go swimming. You've got to work in the park, you know, watch a really great movie or have a sangria. You know, you really have to make a good balance between the two.
Yeah.
Does that help?
That has been an issue with me. I really related to what you said about working and then getting sick is kind of like the only way my body was like, hello, pay attention to me kind of thing. So that makes complete sense. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so our next person is a 614 prefix.
Hello, this is David from Australia.
Hello, David.
Hello, how are you? Great to be here. Hey, look, the question I've really got is I'm sort of feeling new to sort of going down this path and just wondering how is the best way to identify, you know, the true path to follow, like the Dharma, to put my energy behind that. I'm in a situation where I've sort of been on a journey for the last few years, sort of moving into my own space and out of the rat race to an extent and just finding my clear head without the influence of the rabble around me. And I'm in a really good space at the moment, but I just need to identify a path to move forward and put my energy behind. And I just this word Dharma keeps coming up, and I just want to know if there's any way to look inside myself to find the true path to follow.
Well, the Dharma is, in my experience, something given to the universal self, not the personal self. So a little bit of, I think, what's coming up for you is just the personal self saying, let's get on with it. I'm in a really good space, and I want my Dharma now so I can move forward. But really, the Dharma is given whenever it's given, right? It has nothing to do with the personal self wanting the Dharma or wanting to feel comfortable. Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I've always, for many, many years, wanted to be of service. But maybe the more correct question would be, what would you have me do today? Yeah? It doesn't have to be a colossal assignment to go out and save the world all at once. But it might be that today is further preparation for really and truly beginning the Dharma, yes? And so we have to know that when it's appropriate, the Dharma is given, the Dharma becomes evident. The Dharma is really just, as Anelia said, following your joy. It's whatever is light and bright and happy on the inner planes, whatever draws you. And of course, the personal self is going to feel fear when we move in that direction, whether it be preparation for the Dharma or actually doing our Dharma. But I think the better solution is just to say, today, what would you have me do today? And that takes the charge off of it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
What do you think, Anelia?
I like that. What can I do today? I think that is a great, great method, a great thing to do. I love it.
And then beware, you know, because one day you sit down and say, what can I do today? And they'll say, well, we want you to unplug the patriarchy. And you'll go, holy shit.
Well,
oh, dear.
Well, I can understand that. I'm all for that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're on a really good line. It feels like it to me. But, you know, sometimes we just take it one step at a time. And the mind has expectations. The mind thinks I need to be going faster. But really, we're not. We're not going faster. We're just pushing off in that little boat in the river and letting it take us, however fast the current is going.
Yes, it's good to know that, because sometimes you think you've been on that boat a long time and you're not really sort of getting anywhere because you can't see the bank anymore. And you wonder really if you are actually moving at all sometimes. And I was just wondering if there was one way just to, identify the path. But that's a good option, I think, is just to ask yourself that question and just open your awareness to find, the response and where that takes you.
Yes, but what is it that is the problem, David? That's the key, right? Is the problem that you should be moving faster and you're not? How would you, if you just specified in one phrase what the problem is?
Yes, I'm not sure if I'm moving. You know, I've got lots of great intent. I feel a massive great excitement over these next couple of years of change and development and ascension. I'm just sort of really sort of hyped and tingling whenever I think about life and what's going on and this change in the planet. I just feel really excited about it, and I just don't know if I'm, participating in it enough or aligning myself to take advantage of it, or not really take advantage of it, but to be with it is the sort of the term. You know, I feel this a build up to something, and I'm just excited to move forward with that, but I'm not too sure which way to move. That's sort of the frustration that I have.
So the feeling that's coming up is, am I in the right place and at the right time, and am I moving in the correct direction?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's probably what it is. You know, I've isolated myself out in the desert for the last sort of year, helping a remote community do a market garden. I've really enjoyed sort of being sort of fairly selfless here and moving forward with that. But it's sort of time now I need to get around people who are more sort of aligned with the way I think and feel, and I'll be making that move sort of fairly shortly. I'm looking forward to that, of course, but that's probably, you know, I don't know where that sort of that's coming from, but I just feel that I want to be sort of, as you say, around aligned people, and that's what I'm moving towards sort of fairly shortly, which is great, and I'm hoping that's going to provide the you know, the synergy, I suppose, that I need to feel part, you know, part of something. Whereas here, I just sort of feel a little bit disconnected. I mean, I love the environment and I love the what I do and what I achieve, and it's just so wonderful to do what I've been doing. But I just feel I'm a little bit not with like people, if you know what I mean. And I'm just wanting to get back sort of into the mainstream. So.
The issue is that you need to identify precisely what it is, and I'm just going to use this word wrong. There is no right and wrong. We know our higher selves, right? But what is it that's wrong? Is it I'm afraid I'm in the wrong place, or I'm afraid that I'm not taking full advantage? Whatever it is, if you just sit back inside of yourself and you identify precisely what it is. I remember once for me it was boredom. I've worked all this time and now I'm bored. So boredom was the problem. But I had to identify precisely what the problem was. And once you do that, then you know that's what's calling your attention. Then you just turn to that thing, whether it's stasis or being in the wrong place at the wrong time or not taking full advantage, and you welcome that feeling. You welcome that vibration because that is the vibration that is saying, look at me, look at me. But meanwhile, your mind is putting a spin on that. Your mind is saying, well, yeah, this is the situation, but I should be moving off in this other direction. And I'm looking forward to doing this because in the future I'll be in another situation, right? But you're not.
Yep.
You're right there, right now. And so identify what the problem is right now, in this moment, today, and welcome that.
Excellent. Okay. That's very good good advice, I think, and that's exactly what I'll be doing. I do sort of live in the moment, and that's a great thing to do, and it's good to identify the problem that is here right now and not projecting what could be the problem down the track, which is excellent. Great. Look, thank you very much for the information. Lovely to be on your call, and thanks again.
Yeah, you're welcome, David.
Thank you.
Okay, Lucia, I'd like to clarify some stuff for some of our webcast listeners who have been sending me lots and lots of questions and various things, and a lot of folks are on the call for the templates, and we have still not disseminated them yet. Some folks thought that maybe we already had. And then also general questions about hoping that you will be able to talk a little bit about activating them. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay,
and
why don't we talk about that for just a minute? Why don't we talk about, just because we are at 20 minutes after the hour, so let's just speak for a moment about the templates. We'll be giving those out shortly when we formally end this call. It hasn't happened yet. And if you haven't listened to the archived call on the 30th of April, please do that, because that's really where we give the bulk of the information. It's 2 hours of information, an hour on what the templates are and an hour on how to use them and questions and answers. So we'll just talk about it very briefly today. But I would like to give you a recap of these last four, because they're pretty amazing. I was given 90 originally, and I've disseminated those on the public calls. I've decided not to disseminate those four on the public calls. We're doing them in smaller calls, and I'll explain my reasoning on that. It costs money to run a spiritual organization in the world today, so it's costing us money to do a teleconference today and to pay Elizabeth to be on the call and, you know, fulfill orders and do all the things that we have to do, maintain a website. So I just decided that with these last four, they're incredibly refined and sophisticated. And I think it's necessary to understand that part of the spiritual process has to do with reciprocity and giving back to the system. And so my proposal is that for those who would like to donate a little bit of financial support to making it possible to disseminate the first 90 free of charge on every public call, and also who would like to join a forum where we can discuss the ways that we're using the templates, and help to facilitate the cost of putting that together and maintaining it, that would be the way I would go on the last four. And frankly, I feel, to be honest, if somebody doesn't understand that, that they're probably not ready for those four, that they probably wouldn't receive a lot of benefit for it, because in life we can't just come and grab for things. We have to give back to the system. It's just the way the universe works. So I've set it up like that, and you can visit our Ancient Templates page, a new page that we have on the website, to read a little more about them. But the 91st one is formlessness. So Analia is a perfect example of formlessness. I remember the first weekend that Analia and I got together, we had many discussions around form and formlessness. And the fact that I have such a structured being, and I've been here for so many incarnations and carry the weight of repeated incarnation. And finally, I said to Analia, well, okay, if you're formless, take me into formlessness and show me what that's like. And it was a terrifying experience, actually, because it felt like someone, you know, those slides, those plastic slides that they have for children that they put the water hose on and then the kid runs and slides, slips and slides down the plastic. That it felt as though someone had just lined the mountainside with a huge plastic slide and was running water down it. And I had absolutely no control at all. I just went into a completely formless state of mind, and I could only stay there for 4 or 5 seconds, and I backed out and I said, okay, thank you very much. but I've had discussions with Analia in the past that that's really where we're moving as the collective on the planet. We're moving more and more out of form towards formlessness, this sort of feeling that I described earlier of getting into the river and allowing the current of the river to take us. So the first one helps to integrate formlessness into consciousness. And the next one is timelessness. And I had a situation where Analia has this wonderful technique where she says, well, if you want a question answered, just ask to be shown the timeline where Lucia has succeeded in doing that. And so... You know, I realized in that morning when I was given these four templates, I'm trying to do a cellular regeneration, and I had never just asked, where's the timeline where Lucia has done a successful cellular regeneration? So I asked, and I saw about 10 lines open up, 10 timelines. I saw the one right in the center where Lucia had done it. I walked down the timeline energetically and interfaced with her and got some information. And then I backed up, and I was gazing at all of these 10 timelines, and I said, huh, I wonder what would happen if I just welcomed, this is my processing technique, if I just met and welcomed all 10 timelines. And suddenly my awareness became quite a bit more timeless. And at that point, the question arose, what would happen if I welcomed all Lucia timelines for all of existence? And just a myriad of timelines opened up all around me, 360 degrees, and I took the plunge, and I welcomed them all, and I moved into this beautiful state of perfect timelessness. So time had gone away. There was no time. And again, I think that's where the collective is moving. Obviously, we're moving to the end of a cycle of time, and time is changing. Time is going away. So the 90-second template is all about integrating timelessness into one's own awareness field. The 93rd is what I call universal mind, and I use mind in the Buddhist sense, not mind in terms of the intellect, but mind in the Buddhist sense is just awareness. So universal mind that contains emptiness. So when I first died and came back, I was in that state, universal mind, but with the experience of emptiness. And then in the year that has ensued, as I keep processing myself and situations and welcoming more and more of existence, that configuration becomes more and more powerful. The 94th template is universal mind containing all of existence, right? So eventually we become all beings on all planets, all sentient awarenesses, all universes. We become everything. That's why when a person finally fully awakens, that configuration becomes more and more empowered the longer they live. Rama lived, you know, he was awake for 20 years, and his awareness field was just incredibly powerful by the end of those 20 years. So we continue to grow and evolve, and, you know, as Gangaji says, awareness is unbounded, it's unlimited, this experience of universality. Even though it is universal, it is ever expanding. The experience never stops deepening. And I think this is what she means, universal mind containing all of existence. So those four will be disseminated, I think it's next Sunday on the 17th. Is that right, Elizabeth? 17th, because we have a call, divining the Embracing the Divine Feminine, next Saturday, and then Sunday are the
that's right,
the last four templates. And why don't, Elizabeth is the only person that I've given them to so far. She's been my guinea pig so far. Why don't you just speak for a little bit about your experience with them, Elizabeth?
Yeah, just quickly, I've had them for about a week, and what it instantly did, well, first to preface, I had really overthought about the whole thing. And really believed that I was just going to become like a total space cadet and not be able to function or focus with such powerful templates, because I've been using the other 90 very, very successfully, and they've been really exciting. But I was having a little bit of trouble trying to move forward on, say, trying to use more than one at once. And when I received the last four, it was completely opposite of what I had imagined. It was so clear. There was so much clarity. There was they're extremely huge. They're extensive. They're detailed. They're perfect in so many ways. And what it ended up helping me do was raise my learning curve to a whole other level. And I was able to instantly, within this past week, start to use the other 90 templates on a whole nother level than I had before. Mm-hmm. And then it was just, it's been basically created a conscious awareness field of the entirety of everything consistently throughout all my states of being awake or asleep or meditating. And when I meditate, I can go into the void and be really comfortable there, but I can also go into the cosmos and be really happy just spending time out there. And time really does stop. It's almost like time travel in a lot of ways. I can just kind of go anywhere I want. I can do whatever I need to do. And there's also a complete lack of fear or worry. They basically got rid of all my original worries and fears around trying to get things done and am I going to have enough time, and am I going to have enough money or anything like that. I don't really have to worry about it anymore, and I can release and process a lot faster. I've been trying to process quite a bit, and they've helped me deeply process so much so that I've had this clarity of mind that I've never had before. And that's basically what my first week's experience has been.
Well, we must remember, though, that Elizabeth is very psychic, right? And every person will have a unique experience when we get them. But that's a great advertisement, Elizabeth. I should say that if you get them today, if you haven't received the templates, it takes 3 weeks for them to fully integrate and come online and dissolve into the light. And at that point, there's full ownership of that light-encoded information. And then, as Elizabeth said, you can start to pull up individual templates or more than one at once and play with them, interface with them, ask for their help. But then when you get, so you should, if you're getting them today, then it would not be appropriate to be on this call in just a week to receive the last four. Give the first 90 3 weeks to integrate. Then if you want the last four, get those and give those 2 weeks. Elizabeth and I, when we sat together, that's about what we thought it would take, 2 weeks for them to integrate, which does not mean that you're going to become perfectly formless and timeless in 2 weeks, but that they will have stabilized. And then, in other words, you can add another tool. So for my 12D processor, it takes 5 weeks, for the first 90 templates, 3 weeks, and for the last four templates, 2 weeks. So if you wanted to do all of it, you would just space it out accordingly, yeah? And what, okay, so that's the templates, and what else, if we could just take a couple more questions from through the webcast, kind of give us a summary of the questions that have been coming in, Elizabeth, and then we'll go on and do the ancient templates for those who want to stay on.
Wonderful. One question was that if people can actually receive it through the webcast, and that is the case, right?
Oh, yeah, you can receive it through the webcast, but we don't record them. So you have to be on the call real time in order to, yeah, receive them.
And then one other question was actually emailed to me by a nice woman. And she talks about, this is a separate question more regarding what you and Amelia have been talking about. And she basically was talking about how her and her husband, when they meditate, they feel like they're kind of in like this plexiglass bubble. And they're wondering if that is normal, if that they feel separated from the outside world. And they were wondering if there's a good positive reason for this, or if maybe they should try to remove the bubble and integrate into another kind of consciousness. But it seemed like they were somewhat uncomfortable and weren't sure about how to go about working with this within this plexiglass bubble that they feel is around them.
Yeah, in my experience of helping people sometimes on private calls, we go through this a lot. And what we've done is we've put up shields around ourselves. They're really just protections. You know, the mind thinks it's supposed to be running the whole life stream, and so the mind at all costs wants to guard against you feeling pain or fear. And so it puts up all kinds of amazing devices in consciousness in order to protect you. They're all protections or defense mechanisms. And often a person puts something around themselves, and for me, when I'm doing a session, if I back up from someone and I look at the person at a distance and their aura, there will be something around them, either a bubble of energy, or I remember helping one woman who had been in Katrina, and she had a bubble of energy around her, and it was as though she was trying to keep the water of this horrific flood out of her awareness field, but really the inside of the bubble was filled with water, and we had to drain the water out so that she could breathe and move freely, and then it was safe to remove the bubble. All kinds of fascinating things that we can do in terms of consciousness. But the way I have people work with that when I help them, and maybe, Analia, you have a comment, but I would just have the person ask the person to sit inside it, and like you're a child in a sort of box, if you're playing inside a box, you know, when you were a child, and if it was dark and you just reached up and you felt all around yourself the sides of the box, I would start that way to see if just by closing your eyes and feeling with your awareness field, stretching your awareness out, just start to get a keener sense of that bubble that's around you. And then you want to begin to work with it. And this is what we do on my private calls, really, is this processing technique of just looking at something, of welcoming something, knowing that it has been put there as a protective device, right? So first of all, you just want to thank it for having been an aspect of consciousness that has frozen into place, and thank it for the service that it's been performing. You see, when you stop resisting something and you start to acknowledge it, give it 100% of your attention and say, thank you. Thank you for being this defense device. Now let me get curious about this defensive device. Let me begin to feel into it more deeply. So by thanking it, working with it, embracing it, merging with it, you can actually dissolve it. Yes, it's been a protection, and thus far it has helped you, but now it's calling to your attention. It's saying, look at me, this needs to be addressed. And actually, it would behoove you to dissolve it so that your awareness can expand in a more unbounded way. But you do that not by resisting it or trying to get rid of it. Be very careful to look at your language as you work with it, but rather thanking it, welcoming it, merging with it. Yeah? That's the way that you get something to dissolve the most quickly, because really it's just an application of acceptance and love is the most powerful force in the universe. That would be my recommendation. Do you want to add anything, Analia? Maybe we've lost Analia.
am I here now?
Yes,
you're here. I muted myself. I did. Yeah, I completely agree. When I looked at it, I immediately saw that it was a protection device that had been created, and the fact that it's now coming up to the conscious level, it means that it's no longer needed. It's attracting attention. That method that you have described is perfect, I think, to be able to reintegrate that energy. That is, I honestly don't think it's needed anymore. Would that be correct in your estimation?
Yes, we don't have the caller on the line. She's just written a message to Elizabeth on the webcast.
Okay.
But if you would like, you can get on the call next Saturday and we can have a look at it. A lot of times couples come on the call, so if you want to have a look at it, we'll just turn the group attention on it and help you with that. Yeah. So that's probably about all we're going to be able to do, Elizabeth, because we've gone for an hour and 40 minutes at this point. Yeah? So, Analia, would you like to stay on the call, or would you like to drop off at this point? What should we do?
I'd like to stay.
Oh, good.
Yes, I'd like
to. Okay.
Stay. Yeah.
So why don't we formally end the call then, and we'll stop the recording, but I would invite anyone who would like the first 90 of the ancient templates to stay on. And also, if you're a person who already has the 90 templates, but you're interested in honing your skills to disseminate them to other people, then you can stay on if you would like to just observe the transmission, and I'll talk through it from both angles, both transmitting and receiving, yeah? But Elizabeth, why don't we open up the lines? It'll create bedlam, but we'll open up the lines and say goodbye to everybody, and then you can stop the recording.
Okay.
Oh,
hello.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.